Welcome back to another episode of People's Stories. I'm your host, Priyanka Ocha. Thank you so much for joining us. I truly hope you'll enjoy this beautiful story and take away some genuinely brilliant insights with you. Once again, a heartfelt thank you for being here. Stay tuned and let the magic unfold. In this enchanting episode of People's Stories, we take you on a journey with Jorge Rodriguez Ramos, a mastermind in product management, whose life story weaves through the vibrant streets of Spain to the innovative heart of Berlin's startup scene. Jorge, with a rich background spanning from graphic web design to leading product teams at companies like Talon One and Femtasy, brings a unique blend of creativity, empathy, and logic to the product world. Fluent in multiple languages and cultures, he's not just shaping products, but also the future of how we interact with technology. Today, he shares the untold challenges of the PM sphere, the evolving landscape influenced by AI, and the path that led him from art to the apex of product innovation. Buckle up for a conversation filled with insights, inspiration, and a few surprises along the way, revealing the human behind the products we love. Thank you so much for your time. I'm really thrilled to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure. And you did say my name perfectly. So that's a rare occasion for people that are not Spanish or from Spanish-speaking countries. Well done.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot. It required a lot of practice for sure. Cool. So let's try to understand from you how the product management space looks like. But before that, can you give like a very quick introduction of yourself? So basically where you're coming from. You already mentioned Spain, so I'm assuming Spain. How was your childhood like? How were you like when you were growing up?
Sure. I am, you're perfectly right. I'm originally from Spain, from Madrid particularly. And my childhood was, I would say, pretty enjoyable. I was a relatively quiet kid. I preferred reading or comics or books or stuff like that. I did have like my group of friends and went out, but I was never really like the rowdy type. I did like football like every other kid in Spain does, but I was not very good at it. So I knew from the beginning that sports was not what was going to be my career. But yeah, it was, I would say I have fond memories of my childhood, but nothing really out of the ordinary, I think.
Okay. All right. And so when we talk about you, for example, right now being in Berlin, what made this change happen?
Sure. Well, I actually moved to Berlin, like many other people, partially for love, partially for work. I had back then a German girlfriend that I had been having we were together back in Madrid. First, we met in Germany, but not in Berlin. Then she came to Madrid and then we came to Berlin. We ended up breaking up and now I'm married to my current wife, who is a different person. But yeah, I came to Berlin and when I came here, I was working mainly as a graphic designer. But through working in different companies and getting new experiences, I slowly moved into product management and into, head of product, which is my current position. But that's been 10 years since I came to Berlin, so it's quite a while and it's been quite a ride.
Wow. And I'm assuming Berlin has treated you well.
Yeah, it absolutely has. Like I came, it's funny because I studied arts and a lot of the people in the year that I studied also came to Berlin because Berlin is a city or at least it used to be a city for artists and for art. And I remember that the people that would say, okay, I'm going to go there and stay, were the ones that left within a year or two. And the ones like myself that says, okay, I'll go and try it out for a while. I'm still trying it out after 10 years. So clearly, it's better to go and not put yourself a deadline or too much pressure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I would totally say that. I totally agree there. Just for our listeners to give some context around, like what Jorge is doing right now, he is working as the head of product in an organization called Talon here in Berlin. And he has worked with many other companies and has like quite extensive experience. And so the first thing, the very, very first thing that I want to ask from you, because, you know, like product management, it's become like this, you know, jazz word and everybody is talking about it. But what is it exactly like? What are product managers supposed to do?
It is a question that is harder to answer than it seems, because as you say, it's become a very popular thing right now. And there's a lot of product managers and it's, in my opinion, a very fun job. But if I have to say it in the least amount of words possible, I would say that the product manager is, or the product manager's job is to get the most output or the most value to end users with the minimum amount of effort from the team that they're working with, which is a very vague way of saying that the product manager is responsible to decide what are the most valuable things that will be built by generally a group of developers.
Okay. So if I understand it correctly, basically a product manager would kind of define how the product, how a particular product could look like. And a product could be anything for that matter, right? It could be like a feature of an app, for example, or the app in itself. Correct. Or it could be like any physical product, right?
Yes. I mean, for physical products, actually, probably the industry works slightly differently, but for digital products, which is my main area of expertise and what usually people mean when they speak about product management, for digital products, that's exactly what it is. It's a person, you might be responsible for a whole product or an area of the product, may it be the app if you're working on a product that is multi-platform, or even in bigger companies or in bigger products, you might be responsible just for a feature or for a user journey or for a group of users. In the end, your level of responsibility or how much you own from the product as a whole will depend on the company size and on the complexity of the product.
Okay. So this word about being the CEO of that particular product, like that's basically very valid, right?
I think it is. I think at the same time, it does give product managers sometimes a bit too much of a sense of self-importance, but I think it's actually not a bad metaphor in the sense that as a product manager, one should have as much ownership as possible thinking, okay, what can I do from my position in order to guarantee the success of the product? And that might be different depending, like I said, on the area of the product that you own, on the size of the product, but also even on the type of company and on the given circumstances. Like it's relatively common for product managers to have to help QA or have to do a lot of tasks that might not be in their strict job description. But I always, in my own experience as a product manager, I always thought like, okay, I'll do whatever it takes in order to increase the success chances of the product that I'm working for. And of course, I would rather that it covers the area that I'm most interested in or that I feel that are more related to product management. But if I need to do manual QA, I will do it. If I need to speak with clients, not in the scope of a user interview, but in the scope of a sales call, I will do it as well. Like it's for me, yeah, like I said, comparing it to the CEO is self-aggrandizing, but at the same time, to a degree, accurate.
Okay. So let's try to break down like this whole product management space into smaller pieces, because as you are saying, there is a lot of stakeholder management that comes in picture. There's a lot of, interaction of different aspects of the product in itself. So can you describe like in pieces or maybe segment what all is required for you to kind of excel in if you are working as a product manager?
So there's two questions here. One is like, what are the aspects of product management? And the other one is what is required to excel? And I'll start with the second one. And this is a matter of opinion to a degree, but I think that the qualities that one needs to become really good as a product manager are curiosity and willingness to learn, because you're always, the problems that you're going to face are always going to be different every day. So, you need to embrace the chaos or the uncertainty to a degree. And the other for me, absolutely necessary quality to succeed at product management is good communication and at both levels of being able to convey to people what you're trying to say, but also understanding what people are saying to you. So I say good communication in both ways. And if we're talking about what are the aspects of product management, that is also a very interesting question, because we were saying how depending on the company and on the product, the facets of your job are going to be different. That's because there are many aspects to what a product manager could do that I feel are starting to become clear mm-hmm. in some companies. Like when companies grow and add more people to squads, you start getting certain roles that normally would fall within the product manager, but those responsibilities start being divided out. So you could have, for example, a product researcher who will specifically look into the data and look for patterns or come up with hypotheses based on the data. You could have someone responsible exclusively for the running the sprint and the delivery, which is actually the product owner role within Scrum, which some people confuse with product management, and some people use the product owner or product manager indistinctively, and they are different things, in my opinion. And then even things like business development or the part that you mentioned about stakeholder management, there can even be specific roles that cover that. So the product manager in reality can be a position that has a billion things to do or just a few. And just to give you an idea of how this is evolving, like Airbnb, for example, made a lot of noise recently when they announced that they were going to get rid of product managers, or at least that was the headline that came up in the news. In reality, what they said is that they were going to divide the responsibilities that are on a product manager and all those different roles into actual different people, which again is something that has happened to a degree. And depending on the size of your team, you might be lucky enough to have a dedicated researcher, a dedicated product, someone to analyze the data. But if not, you as a product manager will have to cover that yourself.
Okay. Then if we talk about the placement of this particular, like let's say this particular role in the organization and specifically focusing on a product, let's say. So let's talk about your specific role. So you're working as head of product right now. So I'm assuming that you already have like a few product managers kind of reporting to you. But let's say if you go like a level down and let's talk about a product manager position. And so if we kind of try to lay it on a landscape of all the roles that are there in the organization, this could be a role which is both front-facing, where you might have to interact with, let's say, your clients who are going to use your final product, so the end users. You will actually also have to interact with engineers who are going to build that product. Of course, talking about digital products right now, you might also have to talk to the sales team who are actually going to sell that product to, you know, like your clients. Of course, business development would be included. And then, that's what I'm thinking. Of course, the design team, if it's a different team within the organization.
Yeah.
Is my understanding correct? Like, is this how it is?
It is 100% how it is. And that's why I was mentioning before how being able to communicate effectively and to understand effectively is one of the most important skills, because as a product manager, you're going to have to communicate with a lot of people and a lot of people that have very different backgrounds, very different things that are important for them. Like it's different to speak with a developer than to speak with a salesperson or to speak with an end user or to speak with management in a company. And as a product manager, you will have to speak with all those people and still get them to understand what you're doing and, in a way, justify the value of your work, which can be challenging, but it can also be a lot of fun. And
totally.
And to give a bit of perspective, because I realize that I've been a bit, you know, big picture and not giving the detail, just to give you an idea of what the most typical setup of a product manager would be, just so that everyone can understand it as well. Generally, a product manager will work normally on a mid-sized company on an area of a product. So let's say, for example, the app of a product that might also have a website and don't know, an app for one for Android, one for Apple. And they will work in a team generally with a tech lead, which will be the lead engineer of the squad, a product designer, and the product manager, product designer, and tech lead are what some people call the product trio. And that's the people that the product manager should have the most contact with. Those are the ones that the product manager should bounce ideas with and try to get their expertise to contribute to the success of the product. But then additionally, the teams will normally have at least a few developers. That's kind of like the bare minimum, two or three. For me, the ideal number would be around four, depending on the, if you're working for an app, then all of your developers or most of them will be for the app and maybe one for the backend. But some teams have what's called end-to-end. So they would have like a developers for the apps, but also for the website and also for the backend. And then there are other roles that I mentioned before that might be in a team or not, like a product analyst or business development or marketing people can also be in your squad if your app depends a lot on acquisition. So that's where the setup might change a bit depending on the type of product or on the maturity of the company. But product manager, product designer, tech lead, and developers are kind of like the must-have. And QA engineers. I tend to forget about them, and they're probably the most important part of the team as well. So
yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I think that gives like a pretty good overview of, you know, like how would it look like? So basically like this whole squad that you're talking about, like how is it going to look like and what kind of expertise would you typically be dealing with if you're working as a product person? And for me to understand it more clearly, so let's say if, because you mentioned earlier that you have a background in arts and you were also working as a UI UX designer as well, like in your previous experiences. I'm just kind of trying to understand, like, for you to get into product management space, it's not like there's a predefined path or, you know, like there's a predefined, I don't know, course that you can probably do. You can come from like multiple spaces which are kind of dealing with the product, right?
Yeah. It's actually something very funny. Most of the product managers my age or even younger did not study to be product managers specifically. Most of them came from either design or engineering or QA or other business. Like I have, for example, someone in my team, product manager, that came from customer success. So that is extremely common for product managers to come from a different background, because until very, very recently, there wasn't really like a specific career that one could study to be a product manager. And now there is, which for me is kind of interesting and scary at the same time, because I feel that one of the qualities that one needs as a product manager is this will to be a jack of all trades. And if you've, during your career, you've pivoted, like to go from whatever else you were doing before to now do product management, that already gives you, I think, an edge. But I'm sure that there's a lot of people that specifically study to be product managers in university and will be great. But it's a relatively new occurrence.
Because I also know a lot of product managers who have been working in like different areas of, as you're mentioning, and then they have finally moved into product management, which I think also gives them an edge because they understand those aspects as well, right? More clearly, because of course they've done it themselves. But while I was actually researching about product management, you know, this thing came out, like, which I saw on a lot of articles, which said that you should be extremely good at conflict management. And I'm assuming because, of course, you're dealing with a lot of people from a lot of areas, as you're saying, the different backgrounds, I'm assuming there would be conflict. You know, like from the sales team, from the engineers, what we can develop, what we cannot. So your opinion on this whole thing, like, what do you think?
Yeah, I would say it is correct. It's just the same way that people say that one needs to embrace the chaos as a product manager or to deal well with conflict. I think that's those things might happen. But I would say as a product manager, what you need to try to do is to avoid things getting into the point where they're conflictive. You will have to deal with different perspectives and with people with different interests. But as in your role as the product manager, you should try to avoid it getting to the point where conflict management becomes as important. But of course, if you reach to that point, you should have it. And the same way goes with, you know, dealing with uncertainty or with chaos. One, as a product manager, needs to try to navigate that the best way possible so that it's bearable in a way, so that it doesn't get to the point where people feel like, I don't know what's happening. You need to give that clarity, and you need to, in a way, bring that leadership so that conflicts don't become that problematic. So yes, you need to deal with conflict, but better still if you deal with preventing the conflict from happening, I'd say.
And how do you practice this usually in your life?
Sure. I always try to, first of all, I try to be very honest to people and to be very open and show them that I am in a company working in a product. Everyone is in the same boat, and everyone wants the success of the business or of the product to be, you know, to be there. So I think a lot of these conflicts come from when people lack that context of understanding, like we all want the same thing. So that's one of the things that I try to get to through to people. Like, hey, look, we're on the same boat. We want the same thing. You might want a different aspect right now, but it's just because you don't have all the context that I have and I don't have all the context that you have. So let's share that and understand why we're not seeing eye to eye. Because I think most of those conflicts come from, like I said, misunderstandings more than real misalignment. And the other thing that I try to do is be empathetic, not just in, you know, when someone tells me, oh, I, you know, feel a certain way, to feel it with them, which is already good, but also to try to preemptively ask myself, how would I feel if someone did what I'm about to do to this person, to me? Or, you know, kind of like, do this game where you put yourself in other people's feet before telling them that you're not going to be able to prioritize the part of the, you know, the feature that they wanted to prioritize. Or when you, I mean, this is a different situation, but I've had to terminate people and to try to make them understand why that decision was taken. Like, I think the best thing that you can do is to try to get through to the person, be honest, and explain why certain decisions have been made, but also let that person explain their point of view and try to understand why are they feeling the way they are feeling.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I mean, this is basically a lot of, again, a good communication skills, right? Like good people management as well as communication skills and trying to be like there for your team, for, like basically your entire team and try to bring everybody on the same page. Mm-hmm. In terms of where we are moving. But then you also mentioned earlier that there is a lot of chaos and you have to be able to embrace it. So I'm assuming that it could be possible that, let's say, we are moving in like one direction and suddenly, because of whatever reason, it has been decided that we want to, let's say, move in another direction, or we want to completely scrap that feature of the product, maybe, for example. Mm-hmm. Does that happen, and how would you typically handle that situation?
It can happen a lot, and I would say it's not necessarily a bad sign that a company pivots or that a product changes direction. It means that new information has appeared and a decision has been made to modify whatever was being done in order to use that new information. I think that is much better than companies that say, no, we're going to do this, and come rain or shine, they keep on going straight because not looking at what's happening. So it is sometimes more satisfying, and one feels more calm when one says, like, okay, this is what we're doing forever. But it's a recipe for failure, in my opinion. So what I mm-hmm. meant with embracing the chaos, I meant precisely that. As a product manager, you need to know that the work that you're doing right now is based on incomplete information, because you need to, you don't have the luxury of being able to gather all the information you need to be 100% sure. You need to be fast, and you need to be, you're in a competitive world. Like, there are many products out there that will try to, you know, take your users or, you know, your clients or whatever. So you need to find a balance between, you know, enough information to move forward with relative confidence and not too much information that you wasted too much time researching. So direction changes happen, mistakes get made, and that's something else that I think it's very important to, at least that's what I try to tell to people. I prefer if people make mistakes because they overcommitted than if they don't do anything to avoid making mistakes. I think that product managers need to be biased to action, in my opinion. But those all those things are part of the game, I think. And you need to like being able to work with incomplete information as a product manager, because you have to.
Is that like the biggest challenge that you also face in working in this particular role?
For me, that was never a problem, to be honest. Like, I always loved this uncertainty, and I never felt, I mean, sometimes if you know that stakes are really, really high, you of course start worrying, but I think that is counterproductive. I always try to realize that, remind myself that there's never going to be certainty, so better enjoy the ride. And once you have enough, like I said, it's not about just guessing stuff, but it's about knowing when to stop researching something. And if you're 80 or 90% sure, you should go ahead. For me, that was never a big problem. I'm actually having more trouble now as a head of product trying to communicate that to some of my reports than I had when I was a product manager myself.
Mm. Okay, so would you like to talk about like any of the challenges that you have typically seen a lot of product managers would face and how to handle it?
No, there's something I'd like to share, because there's something else that I feel we've all heard the term being data driven, and now even that term is a bit tainted, and now people speak about being data informed because we became too data driven. But that's another of the things that I sometimes see as a challenge for product managers, especially for new product managers, is this tendency for wanting to have track everything. Of course, it's good to track stuff, but track only the important things. Don't fall in this fallacy of like, if I track everything, I will have all the information and truth will reveal itself, because that's never going to happen. And it will take you time to, and attention to look at all the data. So always, again, like I said before, go for 80%, don't go for 100%, and take the 80% that is important. And I think the other biggest challenge that I see with starting product managers is the other aspect that we mentioned, like human interactions. I think as a product manager, especially as a newly starting one, you need to remind yourself very often, or ask yourself, who am I speaking with? Like, what context does this person have? What is important for this person, given his or her position in the company and the project that we're talking about? And what information should I disclose to them and what not, because it's just not interesting to them? I'm a big fan of being very transparent, but the problem is that not everyone has the same context, and not everyone, some information that might feel like transparency to me will feel like clutter for someone else. So you need to decide what do you disclose, when and how you present information.
Yeah. Actually, that's a very good advice, you know, and I feel like not only for product managers, but generally also a very good advice, because of course, it's like so much of data overload, like for everybody. If you start looking at like everything, of course, it's going to take time, right? So you have to prioritize what is important in that context and, you know, focus on that. So you mentioned that, you know, you've worked in different industries in the product space. And my question was like, do you see a very stark difference between how a product manager's role looks like in one industry as compared to the other? Or is it like pretty similar?
I think it depends on the product. For me, the biggest difference is between working on B2C or B2B, depending on the B2B. I think that I worked on B2Bs that were the businesses that we were catering for were small enough, and enough of them so that it almost felt like working for a B2C. But if you're working for a B2B that targets specifically very big companies, that means many things. It means that your number of users or clients is always going to be in the hundreds or maybe in the low thousands. You might have a huge company just with 1,000 enterprise clients. But that means that you cannot, going back to the data that we were talking before, you cannot expect to have quantitative data or the same type of quantitative data that you would have if you have an app that hundreds of thousands of people use daily. So that is one big difference. And the mm-hmm. other big difference on B2C that I think changes how one should think of product and changes also the team setup is when the product that you are working on, the people that buy it are different than the people that are going to use it. And this is the case, for example, again, for B2C that are an enterprise. Someone that buys HubSpot, to mention one, or Pleo, or any B2B software as a service, they are not the people that are going to use it later. So you need to remember that when you then do usability testing on where you prioritize features, because maybe what your users want the most is not necessarily what's going to be most optimal for your own business in the short or even midterm, because it's not the one that is going to close deals. And I think that most of the literature, most of the articles that I see out there are mainly centered on B2C product management. And I see a gap on that B2B enterprise.
So on that aspect, like when you mentioned that, you know, your end user might be different than the user who's buying it, who would you typically focus on? Because of course, for example, I'm just thinking about a product that I particularly deal with in my work, in my professional life. And so basically it's a product that we use to administer our equity, but it is being used by the employees. So I'm just thinking, like, as a product manager, what would your priority typically be? Like, of course, there's no correct answer for this one, but your opinion.
It depends a lot on the product. Like, there's products that are B2B, like Slack or Notion, for example, where I would never say you should prioritize speaking with the person in HR that, you know, buys like Slack or Notion or whatever it is, because Slack or Notion can work as, can have product-led growth, because in the end, it will be the people using it daily in the companies that will tell the people in their company, like, hey, I really like this tool, we should buy it. But if the product that you have is specific only to a few people in the company, so for instance, let's imagine like a finance tool that only three or four people in a company are going to use and that needs to have very specific features that the CFO wants to have. In the end, if you move to that company as someone working in finance, you're going to use whatever tool they're already using. You will not have much of a say into what happens. So that would be the case where I would say then maybe prioritize a bit more, you know, what the feature set or what the CFOs of the world want. But this is, of course, not binary. Like, this doesn't mean that you should completely forget your end users. Yeah. Because if a tool is completely hated by the end users, you will also have a very hard time selling it.
Yeah. I mean, eventually it will catch up, right? Eventually people who use it will come and say that, okay, it's not like a
Or it will be so terrible that people will not use it at all. And then exactly, it will die. Yeah. There's no competition, which is the saddest way to die.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the worst part would be that you would not even know, like, what hit you, you know, because you were not even aware of that thing. And so one more thing from my side is, let's say if somebody wants to pivot in product space. And as you mentioned, like a lot of people who are working in product space right now have taken the degree of, let's say, product management. Mm-hmm. What do you think is like what's the best advice from your perspective? Like what would you suggest?
Sure. I'll speak about my own story and about most of the stories that I've heard of how people got into product. And usually it's a combination of knowledge that is useful for the product that you break into. So I was a product designer, and the product manager in the squad that I was working for left. And they offered me the position because I had shown interest and because that product was very much like on the attention game and required a lot of UX orientation. So I was someone that brought the right knowledge, even if I lacked some of the product management knowledge that were necessary. Same thing with other very technical products. I know people that were QA engineers, and right time, right place. The product manager left and they got offered the position because they showed interest in product management. They had knowledge that was valuable for that specific product. And they showed the interest by speaking with their manager, or the product manager left and they had that position. So my tips would be, make sure that your interest in moving to product is known to your company or your team. Make sure that your company or your team might, you know, offer you that opportunity at some point, because if not, it might be better to try to move somewhere else. Because the easiest way to transition is within the same company in a circumstance like that, where the product manager leaves and you get moved in. If you're trying to cold start your career as a product manager moving to a new company, again, I would still tell you to leverage your prior experience. So using my example again as a designer, if I was a designer that had decided that I wanted to become a product manager and I was applying to places, I would look for companies that had products that had very good UX or that needed of a good UX in order to be successful. And I would also offer myself, I would show that I have a keen interest in product by saying, like, look, I'm willing to work, you know, as an intern of product for a few months just to show you that I'm serious. Like, be willing to show that you're really into that. So yeah, that's...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think these are like fantastic tips in general. And just one thing that I wanted to also, let's say, elaborate a little on was the fact that you mentioned that in most of the situations that you've seen, the person was already working with the product manager, mm-hmm. you know. So you were already kind of shadowed by that person. So you knew like what the responsibilities are and, you know, what's the job going to look like. Mm-hmm. But for somebody who has not worked in this space, you know, has not worked directly or closely with a product manager and they want to move into this area, then what would your advice be? Like, you know, like without having any kind of experience.
Sure. My advice would be to try to get close to a product manager to see what they do, because that's also part of the thing. Just having spent time, if I know that someone that is not a product manager, that might be a product designer or engineer, I don't care, has spent time in a team with a good product manager, I know that that person will have seen what the role means and how to do it well. So they will at least have that reference. Mm. So definitely my tip would be try to find product people that you can, if not in your team or in your company, then try to meet them at meetups or try to read about it. And if we're speaking more about reading about product management or what courses could be done, I know that a lot of people do the either like a product owner course, which is, it is useful in itself. It gives you some understanding of certain practices. So by all means, if you're trying to break into product management and you want to do a course, do one about how product ownership works or about agile or things like that. But I think that I would always recommend find the person that is doing that role, get close to them and see how they do it, to also make sure that you actually want to do that. Because some people, if you've never actually seen how a product manager works, maybe you think you would want to do it, but that's not true.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with what you're saying. And I think that was like one of the reasons why I started this podcast, because I wanted to actually talk about, okay, what do you do? Like, you know, like how does a typical workday look like? And so people get an idea of, okay, maybe this is something I want to do, but might actually not want to do, you know, when you get the details of that job. Perfect. So I think I have like a pretty good idea of this space from my perspective. Like, I do understand. And I think for somebody who is wanting to get into the area, as you're mentioning, try to get in close contact with product managers in that space. And I think that would be like the best way to kind of understand, first of all, and then transition, if you still think that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. And from your perspective, Yuri, how's the European market in general looking like? Like, what do you think the scope of product management is going to be in the future?
I hope it will be good. Currently, we are in, I mean, it seems like we're getting out of the gloomy first months of 2023, but we all know that the end of 2022 and the beginning of this year have been a bit uphill So there's been a lot of layoffs in many tech companies, and things are still relatively slow. But in my opinion, and maybe I'm speaking about my hopes here as well, but I think that things are starting to get better. Certain industries like AI, for example, is now booming. And even other industries that were very badly hit, like fintech, are getting back on their feet. So my opinion is that hopefully sooner than later, we will have more companies, particularly in Berlin and in Germany, opening up. And I can already see some positions reopening. So I think maybe we will not go back to, to where we were in end of 2020 or beginning of 2021, but we will definitely get to better times.
That's very good to hear. And one last thing from my side. So do you see AI as a complementing, like what role do you see AI as play? Is like a complementing role, or do you think, you know, it poses some kind of threats to the product management space? My opinion is not, but yeah, I would.
I think asking me that question right at the end is really, really, really evil, because we could speak for a whole hour about this. But I'll give my two cents about generative AI or large language models, which is, I think, most of what people now speak when they speak about AI. I think it can be extremely useful for product managers if they use it the right way. Generative AI is very useful for precisely that, generating stuff that didn't exist before. So for instance, if you need to check or create like a short pitch for a product, you can ask ChatGPT to create that for you and test it out. If you need to, for sales, for example, it's also very useful to send out emails to prospects. What I would absolutely not recommend people to use AI for, or large language models, is for any kind of search. So to say, tell me what my competitors are doing, or tell me what this company does, because it doesn't work like that. So don't do that. But for everything else, I think a good product manager should use whatever tools they can, and AI is one of them.
Yeah, yeah. I totally agree. And I think I personally feel that AI is just going to make you much more efficient with your job if you use it the right way, you know.
I agree. I completely agree. And I think it's a question of knowing when to use it, how to use it, and when to double check the output, which is most of the time.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. And so, perfect. I mean, I think I have everything answered. Just a last thing for sure. You said that, you know, you should try to get yourself, like, let's say if you do not know, like, a product manager directly, you should try to get yourself into those networks or, you know, like those circles. Are you aware of any specific, I don't know, let's say a meetup group or something of that sorts here in Berlin? If somebody wants to, you know, get into that area, like how can they start exploring?
Sure. There's two groups that I can definitely recommend. One is called Mind the Product, which has meetups here in Berlin, but also all over Europe. So for anyone that is listening outside of Berlin, they can go to theirs. Just do a quick Google search, Mind the Product, and you'll find them. And the other one specifically in Berlin is, it's actually a company called Product People, but they have a lot of meetups for both product leadership, but also for product managers in general. And they are more than happy to have people joining there. And they since they work, having product people working for them in third-party companies, they can also probably give very good advice about how to break into product management.
Okay, perfect. I think this is like the perfect note for anybody who's listening to this episode. Maybe if you want to kind of explore in your own area, as Jorge mentioned, there are opportunities like where you can just go and meet people and maybe talk to them and try to understand what it looks like, or, you know, just get more experience, try to understand the industry. I think it's definitely a very good advice to be able to understand this area. But thank you so much for your time once again. This was really nice to talk to you. And yeah, I mean, I look forward to many more talks, but thanks for now.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Priyanka. It was a pleasure on my side as well. And yeah, to many more talks.